Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
I want you to tell the people what you were doing when I called you, when you called me.
Doing what I normally do at 11:30 p.m. on the nights that we record and I set up my mic.
Right.
I was singing along, or should I say duetting, with a random...
No, you should say singing along.
I should sing along. No, I'm going to say duetting, Thomas, with a random person who had, you know, sung one half of the karaoke part to 17 from Heather's, and I was singing JD. So there.
So
I see nothing wrong with that.
Tweet as in Hendrix your half of a duet videos. And
oh my god,
maybe he'll sing along with you.
No, do that. That'd be well fun. I love to. Do you never do that? Just record like one half of the song and then you sing the other harmony part.
That's as in Hendrix on Twitter, not Musical Mash on Twitter. As in Hendrix.
Well, you have no fun. Most of like I literally have folders of me just singing like it's like, Les Mis, finale, Fontaine, and then I'll just like sing the eponym part over the top.
Do you have like bookmarks in the top of your web browser for different duets that you like click on for?
Make some myself, and just like duet with myself.
As in Hendrix 2 on YouTube.
Yeah, maybe that's a thing that I could start. Sing with me, sing with Jim.
Do it. Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theater Happy Hour, your weekly podcast with mojitos and mixtapes. I see you've typed here mixed tapes. Was that intentional or is that a Scottish thing?
Because it's a mixed tape?
Ah, this might be a Scottish thing. In America, we would call that a mixed tape. Singular.
Maybe I've just got that wrong.
But I wondered if you were going for kind of some kind of cocktail illusion there because it's a mixed tape. It'd be a good if you had like a 90s bar.
That's exactly what I meant. Let's pretend that's what I meant. No, I think I just got it wrong.
Guys, Jimmy did something wrong.
Uh-oh. A mixed tape. He made a mixed tape. That works,
doesn't
it?
Oh, man. Speaking of mixed tapes, what are you drinking today?
You caught me just taking a mouthful. Oh, thank you. Thank you. A waiter there just handed me a free glass of, I think it's just sparkling wine. But that's fine. It's what you get at an exhibition like this. Glug, 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 glug.
I didn't know we were bringing the improvisational moments into this part of the podcast.
We are. We absolutely, they're going to be everywhere. We're just going to start creating our own shows,
God.
Just making them up straight away. Yep.
That's much better than what I've got.
What have you got? I'm intrigued.
I've just got a coffee cup full of photographic development fluid.
That was another option that I thought of. You know? But I was going to do it, but act it out again and like do me like dying because I'm just drinking like lots of chemicals.
So that might have been more confusing than your initially already confusing improv moment.
Potentially. But if you saw the physical actions.
That's true.
I snapped on and everything.
I think you should incorporate more physical actions into silent physical actions into our audio only format show.
I think right now
Jimmy is doing so many things.
Anyway, what are we talking about today?
What are we getting on about?
Tell ya.
I
don't think anyone got this, but that's fair because, I mean, difficult.
That's a fair question.
Yeah. One of the co-collaborators on this musical, don't know if I'm doing an American accent, has worked with a laundry list of famous musical theater names. Lin-Manuel Miranda, do you know him?
Rings a bell.
He's all right. Jeremy Jordan, Ramin Karimloo, Betsy Wolfe, Annalee Ashford, and Miss Sierra Bogus, Ariel herself. But not in the way that you would think. What show, Thomas?
What show could it possibly be? We're talking about 35 Millimeter, a musical exhibition.
captured light, gathered imaging on photo sites. A sensor, small like a tooth, records and stages pixel pages of truth. Stopped in pose in a world that never goes.
Time Who knew, right?
No one, apparently.
That's fair. That's fair. So what we were meaning by that, not in the way you think, is because 35mm, a musical exhibition, is actually based on a series of photographs, or inspired by a series of photographs by Mr. Matthew Murphy, who is a big New York photographer who's taken many headshots.
Many very famous headshots. Yes. All these famous people he's worked with.
But, exactly. You
know, trick question. We haven't had quite a trick question in a while.
Exactly. And I'm sure if you Googled all those names together, you would maybe just get Broadway.com being like, these people have won awards. This is a musical, a musical exhibition. I'm going to say a song cycle, but we'll talk about that later.
We'll talk about that for sure.
But a musical exhibition by Mr. Ryan Scott Oliver.
Yeah. What else has he done?
He has done, probably his other biggest thing would be Jasper and Deadland,
which is pretty big.
The gorgeous and hunky Matt Doyle. And other than that, he's not done vast amounts. He's got a couple of things in development. He's working on like a dark Peter Pan adaptation kind of thing.
And he's done a couple smaller things that I've not heard of. Mrs. Sharp, Darling... Wee Foxes, but these are not things that have 35mm, I think, is certainly one of his more well-known works.
Well, it was fully produced, though the other ones I think were done either regionally or, you know, in development, like rehearsed readings, whereas 35mm actually got put on in an art space off Broadway.
Yeah.
So there you go.
It played off Broadway in 2012 and then had an off West End production in 2013. And it's going to be revived again this year on the West End.
And yeah, in like a matter of minutes.
Yeah.
So that's quite cool. Literally, this is not going to get to where we're like, oh yeah, they don't do it. I had no idea because we decide what we're going to be doing like weeks and weeks and weeks,
weeks
in advance.
I
had no idea that this was going to coincide with this, but. Hey, it has. So, hey,
what do you know? It was in the air. It was in the zeitgeist.
It was indeed. It's difficult to say what this is about because it's not really about anything.
Yeah, I think the place to start is this is a song cycle at its most base level. This is a song cycle. Mm-hmm. It's a series of songs loosely related to each other, where we're trying to say something by putting them all together.
But I want to almost challenge that again. Not right now. We're going to challenge that at the end. That's going to be a concluding thing. But
building
I do
it
want
up to be really big.
Oh, it's going to be huge. But no, I do want to challenge that because, you know, obviously we've done a song cycle before. We did songs for New World. And that is definitely a song cycle. But I feel like this is something kind of different. Similar in many ways, but something kind of different. And we'll maybe tease apart why I think that.
Yeah. On its most base level, each song in this show is inspired by one or a couple photos. And the photos are featured heavily in that song. You can see them and there's, you know, they never explicitly say why. And then maybe there's a question why even. It's a big... Photos are important. 35mm, a musical exhibition. It's in there too. Also, would you say there's a double entendre going on here in the title? A musical exhibition?
What do you mean?
Well, so A musical exhibition, as in we are at a photo showing an art gallery where you're getting your glass of wine, but a musical exhibition where we are exhibiting ourselves, where there is kind of this exposure of something.
And this is what I'm talking about with a song cycle. I think it is more of an exhibition as opposed to a song cycle, in its most literal sense.
Interesting. And I'm leaning the other way, but
yeah,
who knows? Strong opinions loosely held.
Yeah. So how we're going to work this, we're going to treat it like I've still got my sparkling wine in hand, glug, glug, glug. And Tommy and I are going to walk around
the music. Yes, and observe of 35 each of these photos as we look at them.
Yes.
Like my mother trying.
Okay, so I guess it's important to say as well, in the framing of if you've never listened to this before, the framing of this show is it's got a kind of all-encompassing beginning and end.
Yes.
And some, interspersed are these
some transitions in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I read as well that Ryan Scott Oliver, he said that those transitions are really just a time for the audience to just kind of like chill out. They don't really mean
take a moment, take a breath.
It's just like have a relaxo.
Yeah.
While you process, you know, the kind of like comedy moments in the Shakespeare plays. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
they're very much themed around the concept of photography. The first one is called Stop Time.
Yeah.
And there's something there about f-stops in there, like we're playing with photographic imagery, not in the photo kind of way, but in the metaphor kind of way.
Yeah.
And it's all about, you know, you freeze a moment, but what happens after this moment? What happens around this moment? Is this moment bigger than this one particular snapshot you've taken?
Exactly. And it is. It's thinking about how much does the bit before matter? How much does the bit after matter? Is it all just about what you've managed to capture in that little square?
This is a high level conceptual kind of show.
Well, we're an art gallery, Tommy. So,
I have so many opinions about art galleries. Maybe they'll come up. But we should move on to the first song, Crazy Town.
Yeah. So I want to talk about why it opens with this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why do you think it opens with this?
I don't know. The same reason most shows open with a song like this. I mean, Crazy Town, without the explicit exposition that happens in a normal piece of musical theater, feels like an intro song. It's upbeat. Mm-hmm. All the characters are in it. It also, I mean, between Stop Time, the transitionary kind of prelude song, and Crazy Town, we're setting up our audience for what kind of musical this is going to be. Oh, we should help remind me. Stop Time, the exposure that goes with it is a beautiful picture of two hands kind of looking through a lens detached from a camera. And then in Crazy Town, it's a whole bunch of different exposures that are kind of different body parts, close-ups. One looks like it's from a migraine commercial. But they're, you know, there's a lot of gesture to them, and they're all set against primary or primary-ish colored backgrounds, usually two photographs. There must be 40 of them, and they kind of go throughout. So I don't know. I don't know if I have a good reason for why we open with Crazy Town. What do you think? Do you have any solutions?
I think it does a couple of things. I think it sets you up for Ryan Scott Oliver's style of music, because one thing I would definitely say is that he has a really, really interesting and distinctive sound that isn't really anything you've heard much before. It's, and again, sorry to always say this, but we'll talk about bit about the end, because I do have a lot of thoughts on him. And I think it sets you up for that, because it's a bit wacky. It starts with a sort of a fugue of noises.
Yeah.
And then it I don't know. I think it's because it feels like it's at the start of a journey, or it's talking about the start of a journey.
Yeah, I think there's commentary about that in the song. The part that reads to me the most is, this ain't no Neverland, this ain't no Wonderland, this ain't no Narnia, this ain't no Oz. This isn't your magical land far away. This is Crazy Town, which is, you know, a contemporary way of talking about Wonderland.
And
there's connotations with that.
I don't know. To me, I think the whole song is kind of just about like that moment in your life where you kind of just have to get on the horse.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's that like really difficult period of like, where you have to, you know, kind of your pubescent days have gone, and you're now just a full on person, and you have to face up to all of those different things. And there's a couple of bits that make me think that.
Okay, like what?
Just so, and he talks about, I can't remember which world he's in, but when he finds the money, and it's that idea of, you know, it's your first kind of interaction with money, and there's lots of it, and you don't really know what to do with it. Then you've got the idea of, obviously, the sex part of it, which is very, very blatant. And then this kind of idea of like, there's the kind of fugue part of where he's talking about his 8-inch copper key, which I have a feeling is very phallic. And it might just be solely phallic, but
I can't find the door that it goes to, and it's bothering me.
Yeah, exactly. It's that idea of,
there's an implication there.
Yeah. And then just when he says like, it's a Christ-like allegory.
Yeah.
To me, that, you know, it's that idea of, it's the responsibility. Do you know what I mean? Christ at the end of his life in the Passion was very much facing, you know, the reality of things. And yes, I think that's where he's at. So to me, it's kind of like, because all of the songs in this, I would say, are aimed at adults.
Yes.
There's not really any like, oh, you know, when you're a kid, it's like this. You know, I mean, there's nothing like that. They're all songs for adults. And I feel like this is the one that's kind of like the earliest. You know, I mean, if you're chronologicalizing
them. That's true. It is. I mean, and this was my follow-up question was, do you see Crazy Town? Because a lot of these songs are, I don't know, for later, but leaning on the standalone song cycle-ish.
Yeah.
Like, I exist as a story unto myself.
Yeah.
My follow-up question was going to be, do you see Crazy Town as standalone I exist, or expositionally motivated towards the rest of the evening?
I just see it as standalone I exist.
Really? I see it as kind of a, like, not exposition in its purest sense, but we're here for Crazy Town, and Crazy Town, like, all these stories happen in Crazy Town. Not explicitly. Not like, oh, these are characters that live in this mythical town that we call Crazy Town. But we're getting used to the language and the brain and the type of story we're about to experience. Abstract, metaphorical, filled with imagery, not going to make a lot of sense sometimes, but still intentionally put together in the same bucket so you view it as one. And don't confuse this with your childhood concepts of Wonderland, Narnia, Oz, or Neverland. This is, you know, New York, and not New York in Wonderland Alice's New Adventure kind of way, but in new contemporary adult quarter life crisis kind of way. But through a deeply artistic lens.
Yeah, definitely. No, I completely agree with that. But I don't think it's tied in to any of the, you know, I mean, I don't think it's like, you don't ever, oh, I hark back to Crazy Town when I think of that.
It sets
you up completely, and it you know, it does the classic musical theater trope of welcome to the world.
Right, exactly.
You know?
And that's why I say expositional, in the same way that, yeah. like, you know, no other song in The Music Man goes like, aha, yes, thank you for reminding me of Iowa Stubborn from the beginning of this show.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we don't actually bring that back, but it tells you what town we're in. This time, mm-hmm. we're not in River City, we're in Crazy Town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I just feel like because Crazy Town to me is adulthood.
Yeah.
Then it's like, obviously. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Like, it's, yes. I don't know. It's hard. Man, it's hard to talk about art.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
But it's a welcome. This is the song the White Rabbit would sing if we were entering Wonderland.
I know.
But this isn't Wonderland, you know?
How much does Frank Wildhorn wish that he wrote this?
Yeah, this would have been a much better intro to it. When, call me Frank Wildhorn. We'll figure it out. Yeah.
I know, we're still waiting on that call.
That's
the hell.
The time is ticking. No, it's not.
Well, that I mean, that's its own Alice in Wonderland allegory right there.
It absolutely is. Day, but good day for us, good for us. You wouldn't let me kiss you, wouldn't let me kiss you, wouldn't let me kiss you, and that is why you were my kind of guy. Then you want to talk about the next one?
Let's talk about the next one. So we have another transition, but that's fine. And then we have On Monday, which it's Exposure. Its photograph is a lady's hand reaching for a gent's hand, which is pocketed. And that, I mean, I feel like that's very clear as to what the song itself is about, it's about a girl is basically singing to her lover, and is basically trying to come to terms with the fact that they're on completely different pages as to how they view love and how they approach it. So she is very much of the ilk of, let's seize the moment, let's do things now, moves very quickly through things, whereas he is much more about taking things slow, mm-hmm. And, you know, letting things build and letting things develop.
Yeah.
And I think that is quite cool because both are equally viable.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And both, I think people can relate to one or the other.
Jimmy, I don't like this song.
Do you not?
No. Can I tell you a secret? That you're not allowed to tell any high schooler ever.
Right, okay, so no high schoolers listening to this bit.
Ever. Jimmy, you've ever gone to see, I don't know if this is an Amerocentric thing or not, but like a talent show, like an amateur talent show, one that's been pre-rehearsed and arranged, not one where like, not like an open mic night, but like, we're going to showcase everyone's talents today and they all auditioned with them. Or a variety show, or, you know, we're all going to do different acts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
I've been in many.
There you go. Have you ever been the second act? Not like act two, but the second thing to happen in a show.
I can't remember, but probably not, no.
The second thing to happen in a show like this, in a variety show, in a student vocal concert, in things that are arranged from different people, the second act is always the worst.
Interesting.
Intentionally so. You want to open on something strong. You put your strongest number there. Then you figure contextually, you want something pretty good to start the second half after the interval.
Uh-huh.
And you want something pretty good to end it.
Uh-huh.
After you figured those things out, you put your worst thing right after the very first number of the show. Because then you've gotten it out of the way.
Uh-huh.
It can't be the first thing of the show, because then people will leave.
Yeah, I understand.
But if it's the second thing of the show, they're not like following up on something that was better than them or more exciting than them or seemed more interesting than them.
Yeah, I understand.
This happens all the time. On Monday is this second act because Stop Time and Crazy Town are prologue and exposition. Mm-hmm. And then we're getting into the meat of it. And On Monday is the second one. On Monday is not bizarre, is not strange, is not terribly, the photograph is not terribly interesting. It's a good photograph, but there's nothing you know, I can tell what it all is. Mm-hmm. I don't think the song is terribly inspired by the photograph. This feels like soap opera standard. This feels like sitcom standard. This could be the plot of another musical. I don't want it in this show.
Interesting. Very interesting.
It's the only song in the show I have that reaction to.
Yeah, I know. I'd say it's, out of all of them, it's the most generic, and it's the most kind of Ordinary Days, no offense, style.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Of, here's a situation, mm-hmm. and we're talking through it. But I don't know. I don't think that would be a universal reaction. Because I think there are people who would relate to it. Do you know what I mean?
I think they need more interesting lives.
Well, why? Why'd you say that?
On Tuesday, I called you. You ignored me. Straight voicemail. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, your problems. Maybe I sound... I don't know.
I wonder if you're the guy. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe I'm sick of, like, uninteresting, non-nuanced love stories. You know, please don't show me Snow White again. This is Snow White, but this just feels so, like, out of contextly pedestrian and bare when mm-hmm. compared to the rest of this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with you. It's not my favorite, and I didn't expect to speak about it for more than 5 minutes. But I do find it really interesting, the reasons why you don't like it. Do you know what I mean? Because I think it's totally, if you really go into the meat of what the song's talking about, this idea that, oh, just because you want love to happen quickly, it means you're young, means you're juvenile, means you don't really understand life.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily true.
I think it's a more specific thing that I'm reacting negatively to. You can entirely unpack this song. You can pull it all out of the box and look at every side of it and look at the picture and be like, yep, that's a song about this picture.
Yeah.
And I understand the whole thing. And every other song in this show is not like that.
Yeah.
There are parts that are mysterious. There are parts that are open to interpretation. There are parts that are surprising. There are parts that, like, contrast the photo or something.
Yeah.
And this song doesn't do that.
I don't know. I think you could get a discussion out of it because you could, you know what I mean? You can argue both parts.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I just find that discussion uninteresting because I'm a cynical hag.
And you're also deeply in love.
Yes. With musical theater.
Exactly. Is that his name?
Yes.
That's a weird name.
Musical theater. Yeah. Well, you know, I try to keep my interests narrow.
That's going to be awkward. And then he will literally become musical theater MASH.
Yes, absolutely.
In the wedding. Yep. Well, that's good. You planned that wedding.
I'm all about the future planning.
Absolutely.
Caroline has toy scissors with which Caroline makes small cuts. Now you don't try to take them, try to borrow or break them. And Caroline, oh, God damn it, stabs your nuts. Oh, gently, oh, but repeatedly. Oh, Caroline threw up and pooed on my MacBook. Whoa.
Well, let's move on to number three. I was like, what number are we on now? Maybe four. It doesn't matter. We're talking Caroline.
Like, before we get too far into it, the picture is two different exposures of
two pictures this
month. A doll, a girl doll with blonde hair. One of them looks as you would expect a doll to, and the next one is close, but one of the eyes has gone a little cross-eyed and about half of the hair is missing.
Yeah. She's been punched.
Yes. Yes.
She's been mauled. Yeah, and so basically this is J. Armstrong Johnson singing all about being a male nanny to a little girl called Caroline, who is like every other annoying child that you have to babysit.
I believe the lyric is, she is Satan.
Yes.
Which is one of my favorite repeated rhymes in musical theater that I've run into recently.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, very, very good. So basically, yeah, and it is very much like situation, comedy. But it's funny. One of my one of my big bugbears about these kind of songs. I can't remember if we talked about it in Songs of the Year. Probably not, because there's not really much of an opportunity.
Yeah.
But it's contemporary references.
Which one bugs you in this one?
MacBook.
Yep. That's a bad one.
Do you know what I mean? Like, those
bug me too. Yeah.
It's they're everywhere in this kind of oeuvre of musical.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, yeah. Yep. Cool. It's not because it's product placement, it's not because that, it's just because
it pulls you out. The one that always gets me is handful after handful of Doritos.
Oh, interesting. That doesn't get me.
Really? Okay. Yeah, that one gets me. Those sorts of things. Brand names, contemporary references.
The Facebook song.
Yeah, the Facebook
song. You know what I mean? It's full of things.
Exactly. And I'm sure it's very funny when you perform it right now when you wrote the musical, because you're not thinking of us 5 years later listening to it. They don't make MacBooks anymore, do they? Or do they call them MacBooks?
It would be a MacBook Pro is what you would get.
Yeah. And you can't rhyme that. Pro doesn't rhyme with anything.
MacBook Pro. It does work.
Well done. You should write musicals.
I should. But yeah, I think it's that kind of thing. It hates it instantly. But so it's not old enough to become vintage.
You initially reacted to this kind of punchline song. Tell me more about that. Because I think this one is darker than a traditional punchline song.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's funny. I think it's just really good fun.
I mean, in the plot of the song, he sells Carolee to a crack dealer.
Interesting. I didn't hear that because I was thinking it when he said Mr. Carolee.
Uh-huh.
I thought he was addressing her father.
Oh.
That's funnier. That makes it even funnier.
You might enjoy this song next time you listen to it. And I do think the idea is he's like running through the audience. I don't think he sells her to a crack dealer. I think he's like walking through the audience. He's like, take her. She can help you sell your crack. Or if you need to barter, she's an easy sale. But don't throw her in the trash or send her in the mail. She'll come back to haunt you. Here she is. Ha ha ha. I'm free of Carolee. Going crazy because he left this girl behind.
Hilarious. That's funny. Selling a baby for crack. That's great. I love that. I absolutely love that. Yeah.
I mean, not as explicitly, but I think that to me puts it only one very tiny notch above the musical theater punchline song.
Oh, no, definitely. And I mean, I think it's an extremely great example of a musical theater punchline song.
Yes.
But no, it's really good fun. It's a really good laugh. And a nice vocal.
Yeah.
Well done. J.J.
Of names and faces. Why should we? We don't speak of husbands or homes or work or wives and happy lives. All we've got are lips and faces moving flawlessly. Holding secrets in our clothes.
Tommy, let's continue our brave ride.
Oh, look at this one over here.
It's
called The Party Goes With You.
Interesting. And here it is potentially a male walking in the streets of New York with many balloons. And you can't see him, and he's walking away.
I do think so. Do you experience this musical, as I imagine most people, long before seeing these photos, right?
Yeah.
And I do think many people experience this show having never looked at these photos.
Yeah.
This one's a good one to look at.
Yeah, it's lovely. I would have that on my wall.
Yeah. Well, and it's fun with the song called The Party Goes With You.
Yeah.
It's a man walking around with, you know, 50 balloons all around him. That's funny. Like, if this was just a photo on the wall titled The Party Goes With You, I would already have opinions and feelings about that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
You know?
But I think it's a really lovely song, and I think it's a fascinating song.
Yeah?
And I just mean fascinating, like, musically in particular.
Oh, yes.
It's sort of sung as, I don't know, it kind of evokes a sort of a smoky jazz style.
Mm-hmm.
And just with the perfect vocal
of course.
Lindsay Mendez.
Of course.
Like, ugh, that woman. That woman can do no wrong. And it's just, it's really dusky and kind of poignant and slightly sad, and yeah, very, very un-Lindsay Mendez. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't go to the, you know, top E belt
the big
that
belt
she can nail. Yeah, it stays very, very low. And I think that's it's really refreshing to hear her sing like that. And I know that they're really, really close.
Mm-hmm.
Like they formed an actress therapy group together, actually,
really?
Which is amazing. So it's for young actors who, you know, obviously just getting into the biz, and it is the most psychologically draining job in the whole bloody world, especially in New York.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a therapy group for them, and absolutely amazing. And he writes a lot of their music specifically for her because he mm-hmm. knows her voice.
Yeah.
And I think this has been totally written with her in mind, and just because of her really subtle riffing ability.
Yeah.
That is infused all the way throughout this, and
so gentle and
So I mean, in terms of what it's about, again, it's just quite poignant and quite
But it's not. There's nothing explicit there. It's really, especially with this image. This is a confusing song, you know.
Yeah.
If you didn't see this image, you'd think this was about a party, maybe more of an explicit talk of like how one person feels about another person when they're mm-hmm. at this kind of, you know, smoky low-key house party and how they feel about when they leave. But then put this man with his balloons walking through the streets of New York, and I don't know what to think anymore.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think it's weird when I look at the image and then think of the song. I think it's just it kind of heaps on the irony of it.
Yeah.
And that kind of like, oh well, that goes with irony, you know what I mean? And that is the Alanis Morissette effect. And I think that kind of adds in the pathos of it. And because that's the thing, is like they're not separating. Do you know what I mean? It's not like
it's not goodbye forever.
Yeah, exactly. It's as if he's literally just leaving the room.
Yeah, it's like goodbye to this moment.
Yeah, exactly. Know? It's almost like, you know, she loves him so much that even just like literally leaving the room is enough to kind of break her heart and make her muse on all of this.
Yeah.
And that's just a beautiful sentiment, I guess.
Yeah. It's an interesting capturing of a very ephemeral thought and feeling.
Yeah, definitely. It's really beautiful. It's a really beautiful song. But what do you think about the fact? So, a really interesting part of this show is the character names.
Mm-hmm.
Each actor in it is like, I think they're like man one, man two.
Right. Very simple.
Or voice one, voice two.
One, voice two. Uh-huh. Yeah.
But within each song, they're given a character name.
Yeah, which I imagine would have been in the program, too. So this is like, you can assume this is part of the show. This is not just like stuff we've picked up later reading the libretto.
Mm-hmm. And so for The Party Goes With You, Lindsay Mendez's character is called The Broad.
Yeah.
I find that kind of interesting because that's a very, you know, misogynistic name for a female.
I wonder if we have ocean confusion. I do think I think the word broad is misogynistic, but I think maybe less so in America.
Okay.
Maybe, especially contemporarily, I would never call a woman a broad, but listen to a whole bunch of Golden Oldie Frank Sinatra songs.
But so that's, I think that's the reason why she's called it, is because this song evokes that
is
time.
That smoky jazz age.
And I see her as that, almost like that femme fatale style, you know, cigarette in hand watching Humphrey Bogart leave the room. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing that evokes.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah,
it's
it is cool. What man so jealous yet to steal my lady away? My maid with hair like jet and skin like pearl and ocean spray. I beg you, hear my call. Good lady, athwart the earth I follow. Good lady. Oh, wow. Look at this one. This is dramatic. So we move on to Good Lady,
yes.
Which the CD insert tells me is exposure 52. It's a man who is standing in a fountain, or maybe the Chamber of Secrets.
It looks very like the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah, if the Chamber of Secrets was white on the walls, and he has an angry yelling face on, and angry hand claws, and there's a very stunning fountain splash that he has created behind him. Like, it looks like he has torn the water into the air out of rage and anger.
Yeah. And that's, again, it's kind of what the song is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's basically about a man who, again, is very much in love with a woman who has left him for another man. And he kind of goes on this rage bender to try and get her back, basically. But, you know, maybe not in the most sensible of ways.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Also, because he's in the middle of a fountain.
Yes. But strangely enough, we're like in the Middle Ages. Blondel's back, ladies and gentlemen. Blondel's back. But I quite like that. I quite like the middle. Again, the kind of switch up of setting.
And we should mention that all throughout the song, the rest of the singers are it's like this interesting Italian chant that is from Carmina Burana.
Yeah. Who knew?
Who knew?
Who knew? And it's, I guess it creates that kind of old-timey feel. You know, it's got that Latin vibe.
Yeah, and it is lyrically appropriate. I bemoan the wounds of fortune with weeping eyes for the gift she made me. She, perverishly takes away? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's also the song. It's not just watermelon, watermelon, watermelon in Latin or Italian.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, it's a good tune. I don't know. It's not, again, it's not one of the ones that I'm like, oh god, I'll listen to that for the rest of time.
Right.
It's a really good bop. It's a good bop.
That works. Yeah, good bop.
Yeah.
Do you view this as, so we're in Crazy Town, which I've said is contemporary New York-ish. This song, and maybe the last song a little, you know, maybe The Party Goes With You a little bit, but definitely Good Lady is not a song that plays in contemporary New York.
No, but I never said that Crazy Town was contemporary New York.
Okay.
You said Crazy Town was contemporary New York, because I don't think it is.
Okay.
I think, like I said, I think Crazy Town is adulthood. The real world.
Interesting.
Because I don't, and again, we're teasing this big finish, but this isn't, and I'm very passionate about this, that this isn't another song cycle set in contemporary New York.
Right.
Because we've got 5 gazillion of them. Like,
yes.
There's too many.
Yeah.
I don't think this is. In the sense, you know, Ryan Scott Oliver is from New York, or lives in New York.
Yeah.
My
underlying question is this a song sung by a medieval knight?
Or, yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
I think so. And I think, completely. And I think that's a really good skill, I guess, of Ryan Scott Oliver's, is that he does that. He writes about things that are interesting and different.
I would. I don't know how I feel about this. I would offer as the counterpoint, which I'm still unsure about, that if in my world, Crazy Town is contemporary New York, we're pulling a metaphor here, that like, especially, and maybe I'm too stuck on the pictures that go with these things, but that this is, you know, we are using the terms of chivalry and the terms of, you know, knights and ladies in white and these sorts of things. But talking about it through a contemporary lens, beyond just we realize that the audience exists in the 2010s, but that there's some tinge there. But I don't know, I don't have good evidence for that. I don't have a good reason to back that up. And I'm on the fence about it.
Yeah, I just don't think, I think it, like, it's just purely
like,
set.
Like, in the right production of this, someone walking out in medieval knight's armor wouldn't be the worst choice, is what I hear you're saying.
That is exactly how I would direct it, yes. I wouldn't, just like, no. But no, like, even just like, you know, bathed in blood as black as pitch, you wouldn't get away with that in contemporary New York, you know? Maybe in the 80s, but not in post-Giuliani New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think, and there's nothing, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think there's nothing wrong in calling a spade and just being like,
yeah,
why not write a song from the knight's perspective? Well,
it's just interesting that it comes two songs later after a song talking about a MacBook, you know?
And again,
right.
We'll get to it. Yeah.
We should move on because we're never going to get to it at this point.
No, I know.
I don't deserve you, but please have faith in me. I'm working to be worthy, and soon you're gonna see. You'll see.
Make me happy.
We're suddenly in the wet party. Fascinating. I love this photo.
It's a guy and a girl. We're assuming a lot of things, of course, but a guy and a girl standing in front of a yellow picket fence with Walmart-style inflatable smiley face balloons held in front of their face, and they're kind of backlit in the shadows.
Pre-emoji days.
Exactly.
Remember those? That's a Watchmen smiley face.
That is
a
Watchmen smiley face. Yeah, with a blue and white sky behind them.
Yep. I just love the shadows that they create.
It's
cool.
It's really...
into them, but it's cool.
It's an edgy happiness. This is not joy.
Yeah, exactly. It is painted, very much painted on. It's that, like, we are happy.
Yeah.
Here is my mask.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess I that's kind of what the song is, but it's another bop. I was.
Yeah, it's. I mean, they're dark lyrics. You make me happy all the time, and you know that I'm a total dick. You know, you make me happy all the time, and that's really fucking tough. Mm. Like, this is, you know, the image doesn't imply drug use. There's more something about a relationship here, but it is that kind of like, we're getting our happy fix. This is not like, you fill my heart with laughter. It's you make me happy.
Well, I think as well, I think it's the idea that you need to be happy. That is that. You know, if you're in a good, strong relationship, then you're happy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Are you guys happy? Are you happy together?
Right.
You know, I mean, what does that, it kind of gets into the meat of like, what does that mean? Like, sure, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, you make me happy. Great.
Yeah.
Here's all of the bad things that I do.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Is that like.
It's not dark to the point of being unsettling, but there is like a tinge to it, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's definitely a little bit jaded, a little bit bitter. Yeah. I think again it's an interesting point to make about just the state of relationships, I guess.
Yeah.
And that they kind of need, especially in this kind of Instagram age, where, you know, everything you're taking is like, look how happy we are. We're so happy together.
Yeah.
And then 2 minutes later, you're getting a divorce.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Is that pressure to be happy?
Yeah. I think it's definitely a discussion of pressure to be happy.
Mm.
Which is a, you know, that's a new age topic for sure.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I think, I don't know. I feel like, again, I think this couple probably is quite strong.
Yeah.
Because they realize all their faults.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's almost like the happy chat is for someone else.
Right. Yeah, it's like we are playing, you know, we are holding these smiley faces balloons in front of our face to demonstrate for everyone else that we are happy.
Yeah,
even
exactly.
That we know we are really difficult to live with.
Yeah.
But and we also like, acknowledge that.
Yeah, it's like that's what you want to see. You want to see us happy because why would you want to see us miserable? Because then you'd be like, oh no.
Right.
Oh gosh. Oh, that must be so odd. You know what I mean? They're just like, this is easier.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put a balloon in front of my face. That's cool.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's very human. Cool.
in disguise. The angel leads me onward, he watches as I sleep. The angel thinks I've got some kind of soul to keep. I feel him rest his seraphim warm against my chest. Don't know why it should be, but by the angel I am blessed.
Oh, wow, look at this one.
Yeah, this is a great photo. The Seraph. The Seraph? Am I saying that right?
You are saying that correct.
Hold on. Exposure 54. Yeah,
I would have this on my wall, by the way, just to say this is probably one of the ones I would really, really have on my wall.
It's because there's an attractive man in it.
No, it's the color. I love that tealy blue.
Tealy blue.
Although I've got flux on at the moment, so it may be orange. I mean, who knows? Everything's on at the moment.
We're looking at a man's back. He's wearing jeans and a white shirt, and he's holding a jacket, either coat or suit coat, in his left hand. The whole frame, it's a Dutch angle, so it's tilted a little to the side.
Dutch angle? Jimmy's learned something new.
There you go. That's called a Dutch angle. I'm 90% sure about. And he's standing on a bridge or walkway of some sort, mm-hmm. which is like green wrought iron with chain link fence around it. It's a very perspective-y shot. Like the bridge goes into the distance and there's some graffiti and a light at the very end of this bridgey.
Yeah, big glowing.
Place.
Big
it's very urban.
And the song itself is great.
Yeah,
I think it's amazing. So I think this is probably one of the most autobiographical out of the whole thing. Because important to note that Matthew Murphy and Ryan Scott Oliver are lovers.
Yes.
And still love it, and where at the time of writing this as well. Mm-hmm. And there's an interview, it's quite a cool interview, about the Seraph. Mm-hmm. And the question was posed, like, so what came first? Was it the photo or was it the song? And Ryan Scott Oliver offered that, well, actually it was, you know, we came first.
Mm-hmm.
And then the song came. And I love that because it's like, you totally... Yeah, that's a beautiful, beautiful love song.
Yes.
Yes. And yeah.
And there's it. You know, there is. It is a religious imagery song. The whole thing is talking about the devil and the angel and God and but coming from, you know, this gay love perspective and how that affects all these things. I'm not doing a good job of explaining it, but you get
well, idea. Yeah, and it's the kind of the punchline of it is, I don't believe in God. I think Jesus was just a man, but you know, there's something about us being together that is more than just, hey, this has all happened. And I quite like that because as someone who, you know, I'm not religious, but I care about faith and I care about.
Yeah,
you know, that side of things, and I do think there's higher power, blah, 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 blah. I totally get this.
Yes.
Where it's like, I'm not using the terms correctly. I'm not, you know, I'm not making a sermon here.
Yeah.
But
there's still an appreciation of the idea of, like, the concept of looking for these characters in your life, not that they're the Judeo-Christian ideal of a God or a Jesus or an angel or a devil or whatever, but that there is some concept of those things that exists in your life.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting juxtaposition there.
Yeah. It's just a really beautiful love song. Good old gay love song.
And one of the few times we have a reprise of a previous song in a new song. There's a little ending of Make Me Happy that comes back in The Seraph.
Mm-hmm. Which is nice. Yeah, it's nice to link them together, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. It makes me, you know, this whole musical is a question. There's just question marks all over the place. But it makes me wonder about Make Me Happy, putting it in what I view as a pretty ending on a positive note,
yeah,
to simplify it, kind of love song with something that strikes me with a song with a darker tinge at the end. Mm-hmm. But maybe I'm then reinterpreting or misinterpreting, or maybe that's the point, maybe that isn't the point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's this whole show for me.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I think it, having them at the end of it kind of makes the Make Me Happy. You see that it is, you know, it is a loving relationship. Mm-hmm. It's just not necessarily, you know, I mean, the phases are up.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily outwardly going to, yeah, be the best thing, but there's still love there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. But definitely going to get that on my wall. It's gorgeous.
You should. And there's
really,
a man
really
in
gorgeous.
It.
That's not the reason. I find this really interesting. This is a total, total sidebar. but I'm interested to hear what you think.
Uh-huh.
What do you think about, like, provocative gay art? Like, I'm talking, like, would you have, like, a painting of, like a Tom of Finland painting on,
like,
your
wall? You're talking, like, the set decoration from Queer as Folk.
Yeah, exactly. But do you know what I mean? Like, or just, like...
Yeah. It strikes me as very early 2000s, just from, like, a set designer, set decoration kind of perspective.
Right, yeah.
But I do think, and I'd be interested, you know, to hear from the gay studies majors out there. I think it comes from a different era of coded coming out. You know, to put it in musical theater terms, picture Roger DeVries' apartment. Pink, curving staircase, lavender everywhere, and you walk into his apartment and he doesn't need to tell you who he is because you already know. And there's, like, you know, the gay culture has these things because the utilitarian, you know, from whichever pierced ear you have to whatever handkerchief you have, you know, hanging in your pocket. Like, we use these things because we don't show sometimes, and having the coded language to out yourself to people in the know is useful.
Yeah.
One of the ways to do that is to hang pictures of naked men in your apartment. And I think it's part of that. Aesthetically, it's not my cup of tea. You know,
because I love a lot of the art, but I wouldn't put it in.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'd feel a bit weird, like having dinner and then be like,
"Yeah,
a penis."
How would you feel about seeing it at an art gallery?
I'd be totally fit. Like, that's the kind of art I love. Yeah. Like, I love Tom of Finland. I think, you know, some of the art that's come out of that is beautiful. I really love it, but yeah, I guess that is the time and the place for it. I would say.
Interesting.
Not while I'm eating my cornflakes.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. I've never really thought about that. Also,
it kind of maybe it desexualizes it, because I like that it's sexual. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's fun, that's part of it too.
And, like, you're doing something with it when you put it in your home. I don't know. Caveat, don't Google Tom of Finland with your grandma standing behind you.
Mm. Yes. Or should we say if you're under 18? I don't know.
I don't know. Probably worth it.
Yeah. I mean, I would say discover it on your own.
Hallelujah, hallelujah.
Yeah, I'll call it Jesus.
And she'll sell for a lot. Very meta.
Very David LaChapelle.
Yeah, it's just a caption.
On the capture I caught.
Once a whore,
now much more.
Well.
Here, wow. Look at this one. This is kind of spooky.
This song and this picture baffle me. So this is Immaculate Deception.
Yeah. So I'm interested, why does it baffle you? Because I think it's blatant obvious as to what it's about.
Wow. Okay. Tell people about this picture first.
Okay. Well, so the picture is like a reflection picture in a puddle. And it looks a bit like the Babadook. I don't know. Like,
it does kind of. It does kind of look like the upside down Babadook, but, like, viewed through the sliver of a puddle on a dirt or asphalt street.
Yeah. It looks like it's very much like your... I've just got my camera. Oh my God, I can see the world through different perspectives.
Yeah.
There you go.
Somewhere between that or, like, the picture you accidentally took while you got your camera out to take another picture.
Also that, yeah.
And it's, but it must be, it's like the side of a building or something viewed through a puddle with
some
arcs on
it. Yeah, it looks
like,
like a big mural or something like that. But yeah, this particular sliver is kind of spooky. Yeah.
And some indecipherable text and maybe an eyeball and a tiny little like quadrilateral of, you know, sinister red.
Mm.
So that combined with a song called Immaculate Deception, which is a really clever play on words without any context.
Mm-hmm.
But the, I never want to put meaning on a piece of art because sometimes that's not the thing. I struggle, and I like this song. It makes me feel things, but I don't know what's trying to happen.
I think it's just about photography. I think it's just about, you know, being a photographer or being an artist in many ways and having to capture things that aren't necessarily, you know, maybe morally the right thing, mm-hmm. but you're doing it for your art.
Okay.
And then kind of profiting from that.
You know, I hadn't,
that's exactly what it is.
If you'll pardon the unintentional metaphor, but I hadn't zoomed out far enough to just think of it as a photography song.
Get your telephoto on. I think it's just purely a photography song. Because like, a shutter is a flutter of clicks.
Yeah, but what about all the religious metaphor in it? Bless the Lord.
Because that's the thing, is it's like by
hallelujah,
saying
hallelujah.
Yeah, by slap, you know, you've got a photo of a prostitute sitting in a gutter and calling it God.
Yeah,
makes it like, oh wow, yeah, God, oh, I get it.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I'll give you money. Whereas if you call it like prostitute in gutter, you're not going to pay nearly as much money for that.
And you've won me over, especially with the title Immaculate Deception. If we're talking about Immaculate Conception, like this thing just came out of nowhere, and ooh, you know, we didn't put you know our pieces together to make this exist, but it's also a deception. Yeah, you've convinced me. I now understand.
Exactly.
What
you know,
the
song's
about.
It's like zooming in on a dead rat.
Yeah,
because it looks like Jesus. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
it is.
And then being like, "Here's Jesus."
With this photography concept song, it is interesting when we hit the much teased, much lauded in part four of 35mm. Later part of this episode where we talk about that thing.
Interesting. For sure. This is definitely one of the songs about, it's a song about photography, whereas no, you know what I mean, the rest aren't about, this is like,
yeah, it's it I'm an artist. It brings you, and we're, you know, if we're talking structure wise, it brings you back out a little bit at the right moment in the show. We've been delving into some stories and some concepts and some ideas and some things, and then this is zooming back out. We're back at stop focus level of zoom a little bit, you know,
and then we're about to get the heavy, because here's a picture
remains
of a stag's head.
Remains and remains, someone's howling, screams like sighing with battered breath. Oh, grating, growling, never dying in a fade world. Praise be, amen.
For those of you in America, it's a deer with antlers.
Yeah, a stag. You have a stag?
We do, but it's also like slang for a man, which is important in this show.
Yeah, it's like for a man in terms of like a stag do.
Right. Yeah. Have you ever been to a place with a mounted deer head on a wall? These things exist.
I'm from Scotland. We like made the red deer.
The picture,
I don't actually think that's a red deer.
The picture is, it's very sepia. It's, you know, yellowy, black and whitey. It's a man holding a mounted deer's head in front of his face and with his left arm, and his right arm is outstretched, reaching backwards a little bit.
Yeah. And he's definitely wearing a wife beater. And that's very important.
Yeah. The song is called Leave Luann. And this, I think, is one of the songs, like, people, if you want to listen to one song from 35 millimeter, this would be one of the songs to listen to.
Definitely. This is a massive highlight. This is so good. Oh my God. It's so good. Yeah. So we're in the deep south. We're in Louisiana. And so we've got the character of the Cajun. J. Armstrong Johnson is back. And he's accompanied later on by Le Voix en Dessous or whoever, or Dessous, and which we have found out means the voices below.
Yeah. And there's a long folk song tradition in America of this kind of song.
Yeah.
All the way back to, like, you know, Carolina, like there are lots of songs about, like, poor old women who died. They're not all of them are as dark, as appropriately dark sounding as this one is. But this is definitely a play on that kind of song.
Yeah. And it's got a really, like, nice southern kind of bluegrass vibe to it. It really it sticks out.
Yeah.
And it's
a narrative song. It's about this poor lady Luann who is escaping her her wife-beating husband.
Yep. And when she does escape, he sadly catches her and kills her. But then she comes back to haunt him as this, like, I love it, like, this kind of deity of the South who...
Yeah.
Basically haunts wife beating men, which I love.
it's a scary, sad song taken literally, but it is a beautifully structured and composed song.
Oh, completely. It's a proper story.
Yeah.
A proper story. And it's quite good because J. Armstrong Johnson, this is his background, is country. Because my first exposure to him was Hands in a Hard Body. And obviously that's in the deep south, and I was like, who's this gorgeous little country singer? And this is him really getting to bring out his country chops.
I think it's a lesson in songwriting conceptualization too, because the song is Leave Luann. The narrative is about how Luann wants to get out of there.
Yeah.
And if you follow the story, the you know, punchline's the wrong word, but the ending is Luann remains and remains and remains and remains and remains to haunt you forever. That's what you get. You didn't want her to leave. Okay, she'll be here forever.
Yeah.
Mwahaha.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's the way to structure a story. That's
absolutely.
That's invigorating without the song, and then put the song on top of it.
Yeah. So an interesting point I want to make here. So on your YouTubes, we'll probably link you to as much of these as we possibly can. Because they've been performed many times, as these songs often do. But there's a female who sings this song, Katie Thompson, is her name. And it was interesting because one of the comments on one of the YouTube videos of Jay singing it was like, oh, I much prefer it with a woman singing it. I think it makes a lot more sense with a woman singing it. And I just wanted to posit that to you.
Interesting.
And see what you think about that.
I think as far as... I think it's two different contexts we're talking about. From a me context, please, let's give more songs to women. From viewing this as a traditional Southern country ballad, those are, you know, in a canyon, in a cavern, excavate. Like, there is something about a male singer there. Because of our, you know, chauvinistic past, and that was the quote-unquote normal. And I think it would add an extra level of intrigue and interest having a female singer with this song. If given the choice, if I were directing, absolutely I would make that choice. Make it a lady. It gives it power. You know, having a man sing it, this is a tragedy that we're reminiscing about. Having a lady sing it, you know, it makes you question, is this Luann singing this? Is this the song she sings to haunt her lover, to like remind him of the story that happened? And now I will haunt you by telling it to you again and again and again, over and over again. That's fun. That's good, you know?
Yeah, because I quite like, I like that it's a guy because it's almost like, you know, a guy singing to his buddy in a bar. Do you know what I mean? To be like, stop beating up your wife, because you wouldn't listen to, if it was a woman singing it, you wouldn't listen to her. But it's a guy singing it. It's got that kind of like, you know, it's a bit. I feel like it's a bit more chilling.
Interesting.
If it comes from a male,
It's a cautionary tale at that point.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But with a female, I think with a female, it's definitely a lot more hearty and a lot more strong. But I think with a guy, it's chilling. It's got a different tone.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah,
yeah. But I think I think that's a really cool thing about this song is that it can be taken in two different ways, because it's definitely not, you know, there's no autobiographical element to this. There's no you know, at no point is Jim Armstrong Johnson singing from his own perspective.
Right.
But if it was a female, then obviously that could totally be implied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a great song. It's one of the most standalone songs in the show. You know, it's the most self-contained, one of the most song cycle-ish songs in the show, I would say.
Mama, don't shut me
out.
Oh, don't you hear my bang and shout? My bang and shout,
my shout,
bang and shout.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Blessed be the baby,
blessed
who cries into the night.
Blessed be
the baby,
blessed
who as black bars hold tight.
Oh, wow. Look at this. This is interesting. Is this religion? Oh,
have you not seen this picture? Mama Let Me In is the next
song. I have. I was acting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot. We're in this gallery. Sorry. I thought we were recording a podcast. What a silly thing to do. Sorry,
Tommy,
everyone.
Get in the moment. Come on. You've done improv. Jesus. Yes, and. Yeah. So this is a statue of what looks like the Virgin Mary. Kind of inlaid into a rock in a little arch, but it's blocked off by a fence post.
Yeah, there's like a caged fence in front of the statue of Mary, and she's inset in a red rock or stucco wall or something.
Yeah,
and the song is "Mama Let Me In."
Yeah. So first of all, if you're in a choir, this is a great song because it's totally a cappella, and it's beautifully arranged.
Yeah.
It's beautifully arranged.
Yeah.
I would totally do it. Like, this is a great one.
Yeah.
It's such a, and it's because it's a cappella, it's kind of pick up and play. So, you know, for the Amdram lots out there, you don't need no violins for this.
Yeah.
Go for it, because it's really good.
I mean, it sounds like a very traditional, when I went to Catholic school, this would be the kind of song I would hear in church, sound wise which is interesting based on its content, because I could sing this song in a traditional Catholic church and it would have lots of meaning. Mama, let me in, why you hate me, call me sin. But knowing the autobiographical parts of this kind of, I mean, for me, this song is about being gay.
Interesting. Never got that.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the song about for you?
Well, I just thought it was kind of not understanding parenthood, but also I think there is a religious element to it as well. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah,
just taking it quite literally of religion.
Yeah,
let me be a part of you, kind of thing. Yeah. But I know. I mean, I can see what you mean. I can totally see what you mean.
It reads, and I don't know. It's where I have the question and the struggle of like, am I doing this right? Which of course is the wrong question to ask. But you know, there's two gay collaborators working on this.
Yeah.
We've already had songs that are about that to an extent. And is this inspired from there or not? Because it could be about all sorts of things.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I guess. That's quite nice. I think it does have a really nice subtext to it.
Yeah.
A gay subtext.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, that's quite cool.
It's really whatever your sin is, I think, is what this song
yes,
is about.
Uh-huh, that's true. Yeah, and it is. It's just kind of accept me. Take me for what I am.
Well, there's also, I think the double-edged sword of this one is there's the religious end of like, why you call me sin, you know, let me in. But then for me, what rings true is like the literal mama let me in and like, why you let me out? Why are you calling me sin? Please let me back into the house. Like, there's don't shut me out, you know, makes it sad for me.
Yeah, definitely sad.
No.
Definitely sad. And I guess, yeah, that last line, love the sinner, love the sin, is that case of, just embrace this part of me. Not, you know, not that just like, it's not I love you because.
Exactly. Yeah. It's right. They're playing on love the sinner, hate the sin. And it's like, love the sinner, love the sin.
Yeah.
Because they're all the same.
Exactly.
Next song.
Yeah.
Why must we tell them why?
Absolutely. So, on the surface, again, what an amazing bop. Like,
yes.
This might be my fave for many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, I think this is the most important song in the whole show.
I agree.
Yeah, that's good. Because this is, I think this is your kind of crib sheet, is that what you guys call them? Like your
sure, yeah, like your cheat
like
sheet
your cliff
for
notes.
The
yeah,
yeah.
This is your what I did for love moment. This is your here's what the show is. You know what I mean, go away and enjoy the rest of it. Because basically what it's talking about, oh, we should talk about the photo.
Talk about the photo. So there's a bunch of different exposures, but they're all somewhat obscured or blurry photos of modern dancers mid dance. Yeah, is that a good descriptor?
Yeah, that's perfect. And basically, Alex Brightman is rocking out. And I guess, to me, it's like playing the part of an artist. And interesting enough, all the characters in this are their first names, which makes me think, again, it sticks out. This song kind of sticks out because they're just being themselves. And it's this thing of... Just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah.
Stop trying to question things. Stop trying to get out the specific meaning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just appreciate it.
Yeah. In what context do you say those declaratives? Appreciate what?
Art.
Okay. That was my question. We talked earlier about you not enjoying art museums. And I that intrigues me, and this is the song to talk about it. Because I love not knowing or not even thinking about why in art museums. I just finished a lesson in one of my classes where we did a crash course in art and different art styles, and it's like, here's one emblematic painting or piece from an artist and what you should know about their, you know, ism or whatever there. And here's another one. And here's another one. And here's another one. And near the end, we ran through Andy Warhol, who everyone knows. The picture I used was one of his Marilyns.
Okay,
so those like pop art, the wrong color portrait of Marilyn Monroe. And then I talked about, only briefly, Cy Twombly, who you might not know. The best way...
I recognize the name, to be honest.
You probably wouldn't recognize his paintings, but he's an artist people talk about. And I am by no means an expert. But if I were to describe his drawings, they look like children's scribbles on walls.
Yeah, I'm just having a look now. Yeah.
They look like crayon scribbles on walls. And one of my kids said, that's not art. That's, and there's that default reaction. That's not art. I could do that. Why are they doing that? What does that mean? You know, that's a path that kids go down all it. But he went, that's not art. And I went, okay, tell me why. And, that's a hard thing to articulate why you have that reaction. And I was like, okay, maybe this will make it easier. And I went back to the Andy Warhol photo and I was like, what does this have that this other one doesn't have? And initially looking at Marilyn, you think like, well, there's intent there, or it's an image, or I can tell what it is, or there's a purpose. But none of those are conclusive when compared to a Twombly. And this goes into the why must we tell them why. It was a great moment. Oh, teachers, I yearn for these teachable moments. About like, art is complicated and complex. And I'm not telling you you need to be a Cy Twombly fan. Like, I'm not saying you need to appreciate this. But it doesn't always have a meaning. It doesn't always look like something. There isn't a why. And it is... why must we tell them why, parentheses, the artist's lament is an interesting expression of something in that nugget of thought for me. But I don't know. It is weird to me that you also think this is a very important song and don't like art museums.
Okay. I think what you're doing is you're focusing on that. What I'm saying is, like, I can appreciate, I'm not going to go in and look at, Monet's water lilies and be like, this is crap. I could, it's not, through lack of appreciation.
Yeah.
It's just, I've been to a lot of art museums where I've just not felt anything.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that isn't to say I've never felt anything. There's a sculptor called Ron Muick who, does some of the greatest things I've ever seen. So he uses silicone to create like hyper realistic sculptures.
Oh yeah, he does the really big people.
Yeah, exactly. So like I saw one of his exhibitions.
Yeah.
And I was obsessed and deeply, deeply moved in a lot of ways. I remember as well, I went when I was in London one time with my dad, and I was like 9 or 10 or something. We went to a Caravaggio exhibition, and I was deeply moved. Like, I've still got a postcard that we got from the gift shop because the chiaroscuro that he uses, it just did something to me. Do you know what I mean? But at the same time, I've been to an Henri Matisse exhibition and just kind of wandered through it as if it was IKEA.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
That clarifies things for me. Because I went to there was a Gauguin traveling exhibit at the Art Institute. Extensive, so many pieces of his work. And, he's Gauguin. You recognize his name. That didn't do it for me. And I think we both, I wonder if you agree, that that's okay. Maybe I don't mind going to an art museum and leaving unchanged for those moments when you might find the thing that gets you. But I think the difference is to bring us back to the ground a little bit. That's on us. It is not on the artist to tell us why. They can give us hints or explicit descriptions or nothing. And then it's up to us to do the work. You're looking at, quote unquote, another one of those totally white paintings. And you have to do a little more work. And you might do the work you're comfortable with and still end up the same person. And that's okay. But, some art, especially art that we qualify more as capital A art, requires less work because the artists tell us why more. And it is interesting, especially in, you know, the musical theater form, to hear this discussion of why must we tell them why?
Yeah.
Why must we prove each part, you know? Yeah.
And I think it's just, it's a really, I get, I've ended every single segment.
A really cool song?
A really cool song. Because it's something I've never heard anyone have this discussion before.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, they simplify it. Like the background reprise, think and you'll miss it.
Exactly.
Is beautiful.
Yeah.
Because they're playing on blink and you'll miss it, but think and you'll miss it.
Yeah.
You know, it's about experiencing it. Don't think. And it's so contradictory when an artist tells you to stop thinking about their art, you know? Mm-hmm. We're breaking the rule right now.
I know. And there's been so many moments as well where I'm like, oh, we're trying to dig it. But what it's come from is it's come from a feeling. It's come from a,
right,
this is why this has resonated with me.
Yeah.
And I will say, like, you know, musical theater, shockingly enough, resonates with me a lot more than fine art does. But I still, like I say, I still have the same resonance. I realize I sound so wanky. I sound like fucking.
It's hard. You should give yourself permission. It is hard to talk about high level art without sounding like a douchey liberal arts college kid, because that's where the vocabulary comes from. And, you know, we make fun of it, too, all the time. I think that's also part of this, too. It's why we start with Crazy Town. Like, some art is stupid. And you can't tell me why it's stupid, but it feels stupid. You know, it is the reason we have art, whether it's musical theater or a Joni Mitchell album or a photo or a painting, is because we are trying to express something we can't do through words.
Yeah.
And so when we try to do that backwards, it's difficult.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it's fun to get there. And speaking of juxtapositions,
and surprisingly, like, there's still like seven more songs in the show.
Yeah, exactly. But what I think is so great is, so we've just had this huge, deep metaphysical chat about being like, you know, just feel it on the surface. And then we get a song about a vampire.
Yeah, which is basically a song about a vampire.
Well done, Michael, because that is smart. You know, he's not then... I know I've just said this about art, but here's this really deep concept that you're probably going to find that you're having to muse over. No, this is just literally a song about a vampire.
It's called Twisted Teeth. The photo is like it's a quad trick as opposed to a triptych. I don't know.
Is it quad trick? If we're making that up, if it's the same thing mirrored?
Yeah, I don't know. So it's the same image four times mirrored back and forth.
Yeah.
And it's a really, I can't make out any describable forms in this.
Yeah, it kind of looks like bats.
Yeah, it's an ambery, orangey kind of, what is it, bouquet? Bouquet? Like, that might be
Do
the
mean
term.
B-O-K-E-H.
Yeah, is that how you say that?
Or bouquet, yeah. Uh-huh.
That sort of thing, like light shined at the camera, refracting through the lens, creating floating orbs of light in a weird, scratchy, orangey, ambery kind of world.
So I've looked at the high quality version, and it's trees. It's tree branches.
It's trees? I can't see that at all.
It's tree branches, but together as a foursome.
Yeah, it does
looks
look
a bit
like
bats or spiders or, you know, something dark, and it's dark and red.
It's quite abstract for sure.
Yep.
And the song's about a vampire, and a love song about a vampire. Really? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Twilight the musical.
Don't say those words; it'll happen.
It will have happened at some point. But yeah, no. I mean, it generally is. This was the paving step to 50 Shades of Grey.
It's a love song.
That's what it is.
From a lady to her mister, her vampire, and about how they go on their love-shaped vampire killing spree.
Yeah. It's like it's like the opening scene in American Horror Story Hotel with Lady Gaga and Matt Bomer.
You know, when you put these words together in that order, the world we live in sounds so strange.
It does, doesn't it?
And oh, you're so not perfect. Yeah, oh, let me count the ways. But oh,
hemming and hawing.
Hemming and hawing. Sung by Radio and Lonely.
Yeah, very strange. And the photo is, we're on a children's playground, on a swing set. In winter. There's a man and a woman in appropriate winter clothing. The woman is sitting on the right-hand swing facing away from us. And the man is a little closer to us on the left facing away from her. So towards us and a little off. And it's all very orange. The sky is orange. Yeah. The world is orange.
And he looks sad.
It doesn't look, it is nighttime, but it doesn't look it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you mean by that. Light pollution.
Yeah.
And really, yeah, this is a tricky song. If this was the one that came after, Why Must We Tell Them Why?
Yeah, you'd be like, oh, I understand.
Yeah.
and afraid to ask.
This is a tricky one. And it maybe the one that I relate to the most.
Okay, tell me more.
Just kind of personal. Let's get some personal chat on the go. But no, I've totally been there. I've stayed in relationships when I really shouldn't, because I go back and forth, and at the time it feels great, and it's like, you know, particularly with long distance relationships, where when you're together, it's great and it's fab and it's awesome and you can kind of idealize everything. But then 2 days after they've left again, you're just back to being depressed. And it takes a lot to make that decision to end something. I think that's why I think this song really, I'm like, God, I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, I really, really get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is a more nuanced kind of song than On Monday in that same kind of world for me.
Mm-hmm.
A more nuanced, interesting take on the exploration of relationships. So it doesn't surprise me that you relate to it that much because of that, because it has, you know, that nugget to hang on to, you know, I empathize. I haven't been there, but I can see it as a thing that exists, which is, I like that in a song. I don't want a love song. I don't want my world filled with love songs that all apply to me. Not that this is a love song, but say relationship songs. Because I find the world more interesting assuming that we all live different lives and have different relationships and have different nuances to them. And certainly there are threads that go through and you can experience different things, but we're all individuals. And so having hemming and hawing, having this kind of discussion of like, are you know, will you leave, do you leave, are you getting bored, what is up with this relationship, thinking about it, it belongs in this show at the very least.
definitely it's just really cool. It's full of ambiguities, it's full of questions, you know, cyclical arguments with yourself, and it's just very real. Like, it is very real. I mean most of these things have gone through my head at one point or other. Particularly the end, like, I think it's very raw, but just the goddamn I hate you heart.
Yeah.
Is that if everything was just controlled by your head,
yeah,
things would be so much easier.
Oh yeah,
it'd be so much easier. But there's that part that will always change.
Yeah,
god damn you, dopamine.
Yeah, well, and it's the big struggle is that you are still in your head enough to know that,
you know? Yeah, exactly.
To like metacognitize it enough to be like, I hate that I can't do this.
Yep. And it is, it's those, you know, that eternal battle that your head and your heart always has throughout your whole life. Just one time, one of them will be winning, and that's the time when it really matters.
Right.
And it's tricky.
Yeah. And it's in a song.
Yeah.
In this show.
Totally. It's a good one. But Radio and Lonely, I find that interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I would have not known that, not having read, you know, this libretto.
Yeah.
There is something I think that totally plays into your imagined situation of this. Like, you hear that song on the radio while you are lonely that puts all these thoughts in your head as you, you know, overthink it on the drive home, or like the, all of a sudden, all the parts of your world suddenly become about the existential crisis you're having, even though they're not. And there is something even super meta about these two characters ostensibly being a person thinking about this while listening to a song on the radio, as you, Jimmy, have that reaction to this song that you're listening to.
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funky.
Funky.
Jesse let Jules know what was wrong with him, and Jules stopped using and binging and kissing his whole life away. Jules told Jesse he'd die for her, which, looking back, was the right thing to say.
Cut you a piece
of this cake? Why, thank you, Tommy.
Now let's look at this photo on the wall. Am I doing the improv well?
You're doing it so well, actually.
Thank you.
You should teach an improv class, I think.
Yes, and podcast.
Correct. So this picture is, it's Jay Armstrong Johnson and a female that isn't Betsy Wolf. I actually don't know who that is. Basically it looks like a couple of things. It definitely feels like it's a road.
Yeah.
Because you've got a, what would be white line if it hadn't been color corrected.
Yeah.
And it looks maybe like
there are yellow lines in America too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it looks like they might be like listening to the earth, or they've just fallen down,
and it does,
or something like that.
Jay Armstrong, there are two photos next to each other. Jay Armstrong Johnson's photo appears to be right side up, and he's listening to the ground, and the lady's photo is exactly the same, mostly, but upside down.
Yeah.
So there is this barrier between them. It's, you know what this is? This is Rose Tyler and David Tennant.
Don't talk to me about Doomsday. Don't do that to me. Oh my god, that will always make me cry. That piece of music. Just stop for a second, talk about Doctor Who. My god.
This is like the Angsty Jimmy podcast today.
Absolutely. By the way, oh my god. Thinking back to the reaction that I had to that.
I opened up a can of worms.
Dark. Like, there's not many times that I've reacted that much to anything. It was hefty.
Cut You a Piece is sung by a friend of Jules and Jesse, who are ostensibly these characters in this photo.
Yeah. And, you know, it starts by sort of describing their relationship as, you know, a little bit dysfunctional, but it works. At one point, Jules told Jesse that he'd die for her, which, looking back, was the right thing to say. And that comes into play later.
Yeah.
So basically, this friend describes how basically Jules ended up killing Jesse by accident in a car crash.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of reflects on it.
Yeah.
In his own life, I guess.
It is a narrative story, but where it is like a third person omniscient narrative story, but where then we hear from the narrator singing it and how he reacts to this story. It's like one of the last stanzas of the song, where he sings about thinking about this awful, awful story of a husband losing his wife in a car crash while he was driving, makes him so scared that he might lose his lover. Which is touching and sad and adult and, you know, hard to talk about a little bit.
Yeah, it is. Because that's the thing, you know, if it is his friend and he's musing on their relationship, then that in its own right is difficult, but kind of using that to talk about or talk to the person that he loves and kind of use that as an example is dark.
And it is. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, what do you think about the cut you a piece of me?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's a harsh metaphor for the feelings we feel about the people we love and the people we care about. Like, I am going to literally give you a piece of me. And so if you were to leave me, that piece will be gone. And that's, you know, and that makes you precious to me, and that's okay. And I care about you enough to do that. And there, you know, there's also something very visceral about I cut you a piece of me.
It is very, very visceral. And to the point where I'm like, I don't know. I've not worked this one out yet.
Especially juxtaposed, like they're playing on a lot of, you know, their relationship started and ended with broken glass, which is, you know, it's a sad haha joke because they got married at a temple and you crush a glass when you get married and then the car crash, which there's something playing on that there. And also just the imagery of a car crash, which is, you know, the most appropriate use of the word brutal. And this is also a love song.
No, it definitely is, but it just feels very intense. I don't know, it's not as beautiful as something as like The Seraph.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's there's
yeah.
It comes from a darker place.
And it gets what gets me, what makes me sad about this isn't the ballad of Jules and Jesse, right? This isn't let me tell you this tragic tale. This is I know this tragic tale, and it makes me so preemptively sad about what might happen to us. Like that's different than like, oh, I'll tell you a tale of a bad thing that happened, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. But I just feel it's like cutting you a piece of me and then asking, cut me a piece of you.
Yeah.
It's quite a lot. If someone said that to me, I wouldn't be like, gosh, that's a beautiful sentiment. I'd be like, please don't self-harm.
Yeah.
Like, because that's it, first of all, I thought it was going to be about.
Yeah. I mean,
but then it never got there. And I was like,
this is why
I'm interested.
And when we hit our well-teased, is this a song cycle, putting Cut You a Piece next to Make Me Happy in, like, not physically, but in the same show, it were the exploration of relationships and what they mean in this. And in between those two songs and a couple other places, I've said interesting a lot. It's interesting. It fascinates me.
Yeah, yours is interesting.
There we go. We got our words.
There we go.
Yeah.
Down on your knees before the queen.
And here we are. Hey, look, it's the last picture. It's the last exposure.
It's an appropriate song for this song, The Ballad of Sarah Barry. I really like this song, Jimmy.
Yeah. I mean, even you would say this is a bop.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, this is a bop. It's an appropriate bop. This is
totes
this
a bop.
This is Heather's the musical, the song.
Yeah, exactly. That's like, I'm very excited for the sort of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead version of, you know, Sarah Barry. I'm excited for someone to turn this whole thing into a show.
Yeah.
So basically, it's about the picture is cool. It's 8 girls.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is sort of Wednesday Addams style girl with her face circled with a red marker.
Yeah.
And then 6 of the girls have their faces all scribbled out, and the last one has her leg scribbled off.
Yeah, and they're like high school girls in a high school hallway, all photographed in like Xerox black and white.
Yeah,
with this red Sharpie marker highlighter over them in various places.
And the song is basically about a girl called Sarah Barry, who is a popular bitch, and was all ready to become the homecoming queen. Is that prom queen? Are they different things, by the way, or is it just you just get different queens?
You could conceptualize them as the same dance for you. Homecoming generally is a big football game of the year, which is in the fall, and prom is generally not related to a sporting event and happens in the spring near the end of the year. And his big senior celebration. It's like the beginning of senior send off, kind of.
Okay.
Cool. It starts that, like, we will never see each other again slalom down.
Okay, cool. So this is prom.
This is prom.
So she is the popular girl. She's the one that, you know, is going to get it. She's the Regina George, blah, 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 blah.
But Julie Jenkins lost her leg in a wreck.
Yep. And so, you know, it's kind of got the sympathy vote. And basically Sarah's you know, through kind of parental pressure, is campaigning to do whatever she can to get this queendom, because it's the thing that means the most. And it's, you know, that in itself is a trope that we see quite a lot in many high school dramas. What we don't often see, though, is serial killer style onslaught.
Yeah.
Where she goes around, like, murdering all of
this is like if Carrie didn't have special powers.
Yes, exactly. Kind of. Exactly. Yeah. In some ways, yeah. Basically she goes around and kills all of the other potentials.
But it is
then gets carted off to the madhouse.
Yeah. In a true minor key bop fashion. I mean, you know, there's the balladeer begin, like, it's almost a rap. Julie Jenkins lost her leg in a wreck, and the chorus goes, amputated. Like,
yeah,
this is, it is uncomfortably funny.
Yeah, exactly. It's Heather's dark comedy funny.
Yeah.
Like,
it's
a lot of, it's fun, and it's a good, like, kind of like tongue-in-cheek, cheesy end.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Which, again, I really like, because it's, It almost like it mirrors back to Crazy Town, you know what I mean? Where that's like the adolescent becoming an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Here we have just pure adolescence.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like uncontrolled adolescence.
Yeah, exactly. And it's good.
It's really good.
I think it's probably one of the most popular songs, I think, from 35 millimeter, I feel like. Yeah.
It's a catchy song. It is less deep than a lot of the other songs in the show.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's no metaphor. It's a story, but there's no...
Yeah.
Well, no, I guess there is. There's the element of the parental pressure.
And yeah, I guess that's true.
You can reflect on the fact that that's something that, you know, happens quite a lot in high schools and...
Yeah.
You know, parents do put a lot of pressure on their kids, and that's where it comes from. And these are the you know, the warning tale, but it's... to the point of ridiculous that hopefully it won't happen.
Hopefully.
Just paper dead. listen and fly
for us and what's trapped inside.
And if the world lies beyond,
does something try to respond?
It's filled an unearthly bond.
There's no answer.
Okay, let's talk about it. One, do we come to any conclusions? And two, is this a song cycle? If not, what is this?
Yeah. So I think this is a musical exhibition. I don't think it's a song cycle. I don't think there's any through thought. I don't think there's any deep meaning that links the whole thing together. I think it's just a series of, 17 vignettes that each mean their own thing. And you can sit and you can look at them and you can muse on them. And
so you don't think there's anything that ties these all together?
Other than they're human stories.
Okay. No. Huh. Okay. So I'm being mean, but you've said that Songs for a New World is a song cycle.
Yeah.
Maybe it's easier. What's the difference?
So for me, Songs for a New World was written specifically to link these things together. So you've got this idea in Songs for a New World, it's all about starting something new. It's all about going forward.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And that is a vagary.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, and there is definitely a songbook element to Songs for a New World. But I think for this, it's unabashedly just different things.
But how is Songs for a New World being songs about starting something or adventure or whatever that vagueness is different from 35mm being songs about adulthood, maybe, or relationships?
Songs about humans.
Right. You know,
that kind of thing. Yeah, like, I mean, no, sure, absolutely. But what I think with Songs for a New World, they are linked together. Do you know what I mean? Like, they have been written that way.
Yeah.
Whereas I just don't think these are. And so I think the fact that these are more standalone and are linked with these standalone pictures make it stand out on its own thing, you know?
I think we will just flat disagree on this. I also think there's, you know, We could write several books on, like, what really is a song cycle? Because I think the answer
is
it's whatever you want it to be.
You know, I do a cabaret in my local pub. Yeah. That's a song cycle because I've chosen to put songs together. Do you know what
exactly?
I mean? In that respect, it's a song cycle. But I don't want to just. It's not an Ordinary Days. It's not a Songs for a New World. To me, it's something cooler.
Right. Well, I wouldn't qualify Ordinary Days as a song cycle. But this, like, as opposed to being a cabaret, you know, as opposed to being the songs of Ryan Scott Oliver, to me, a song cycle has just a scintilla more of effort behind the arranging of the songs and the putting them all together in one night than a cabaret. You know, even the fact that we hear every once in a while a reprise between one or two things, or that we have transitions between stuff, pushes me more into the world of these songs are next to each other in an intentional order at the same time in the same night as a part of the same performance to make them one cohesive work of art. You know, I feel like if you start poking at the Jenga bricks and pulling one song here or there out of this show, it is a different show. It is less of a show.
Completely. But in the same way, I'm a photographer and I'm curating an exhibition.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick the photos that I want to put into that exhibition to, you know, for that exact reason. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
to me, that just reads a song cycle. I think that's where our disagreement comes from about what a song cycle is, which, let's be honest, no one knows.
I would say, what I would just say is I think when you think of a song cycle, you do think of something trying to link them all together. Do you know what I mean? Whether it's a musical theme, whether it's something like that. I just feel with this, it's you're totally allowed to just take them bit by bit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's not something that's been done that much. Do you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would, you know, what I'd throw back to you in my mean way is I think you could do that with Songs for a New World.
You could. But I feel like there is, Jason Robert Brown would be disappointed in you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is Ryan Scott Oliver is disappointed in you. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying that. That's okay.
Well, no, just from what he said about the show,
yeah.
I don't think so, because he said that it's, you know, it's a collection of photographs.
Yeah, but it's a collection.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, but there's no, do you know what I mean? It's not like the theme is this and this,
right.
You know, Carol Lee is linked to Twisted Teeth because, do you know what I mean?
Okay, yes. That, yeah. All right.
Do you, like, just like leave Luann and hemming and hawing.
Right.
Do you, like, right. There's these independent moments.
But hemming and hawing and Make Me Happy, or The Seraph and Mama Let Me In.
Right, okay.
But yeah, maybe I'm implying that. But maybe
I think that's it. What attracts me so much to 35mm mm-hmm. is the fact that you can just look at them as their own individual things and have
yeah.
different feelings. You don't need to be like, and at the end of this, it's all summed up neatly in
right.
this little bow. Whereas yeah. Songs for New World, you're supposed to leave thinking, I'm
right.
thinking hope.
Look at all those adventurers. Yeah, I'll give you that for sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I like about this, is it's just like moments in time.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that's cool.
Yeah.
Again, what I do want to say is a kind of coda.
Uh-huh.
I do want to talk about Ryan Scott Oliver because he's someone that...
more people should talk about.
For sure. He like extremely excites me. In everything that he writes, like I'm very much, the first thing I ever listened to was Jasper and Deadland, because I fancied Matt Doyle, and I was like, I wonder what he sounds like. and then I was just extremely surprised, because I was like, this is freaky, this is odd, this is so odd. And if you've listened to this podcast, you would know that I love odd shit. whether it's odd for the sake of being odd and just
right.
trying something, or whether it's doing it beautifully and artistically to make sense, then that's what I love. I would say 35mm is actually only kind of scratching the surface of what Ryan Scott Oliver can do.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely see lots of glimpses of it.
Mm-hmm.
But he, on Spotify, there's a... I mean, what does he call it? He calls it a short or brief musical allegory. Other body, a brief musical allegory.
Oh, I don't know that.
So it's basically, it's six songs,
mm-hmm.
all kind of run into each other. It's one, so it's like an epic poem. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of talking about the importance of telling stories and the importance of passing things on and learning mm-hmm. from mistakes and, you know, environmentalism. Like, it's a proper allegory. Like, it's a proper artistic thing. And I think
uh-huh.
this is something that he is extremely good at. And
uh-huh.
there's, in the kind of musical theater sphere at the moment, there's not many people, I feel, who are as good at telling stories like this. Like, I'd be inclined to say someone like... like Duncan Cheek, again, is very good at writing and metaphor and painting these really beautiful pictures.
I mean, if you took the names out, you could have been describing Dave Malloy, too.
I think...
And Dave Malloy... I see the differences you're talking about, but...
Yeah.
There's something...
Yeah, no, I could totally pinch my head, especially when it comes to, like, experimental music.
Yeah.
But he writes in like, deep, like, poetic allegory.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But what I think is so good, and you can tell it in here,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's only really like two songs in this whole show that are solos.
Yeah.
And he uses vocals.
Yeah.
So interestingly
yeah.
to really create an atmosphere, to create a feeling, and no one else is doing it, and I find it very exciting.
Yeah, it's not like the chorus people trot themselves out whenever they, you know, the townsfolk need to come sing in the song. Like, there are voices that exist sometimes.
Yeah, he's kind of unashamed. Like, and you know, he's not creating a new thing. Like, I would say, like, someone like Andrew Lippa does it, or Stephen Schwartz does it.
Yeah,
but I feel like where they go, he will go that little step further.
Mm-hmm.
To be a bit like, well, I'm going to just see what this sounds like. This sounds pretty cool. We're going to go with that. Do you know what I mean? I implore people to listen to other Bot A and kind of let me know what you think, because it's cool. I'm saying it again. It's cool. He's a cool guy. And I'm very... So Darling is the kind of dark Peter Pan rehash. And I think that's currently in development.
Okay.
So I really hope that appears, because it's like, yeah, he's...
Yeah, a good him.
It's exciting. Yeah, it's exciting. And he works with good people. Like,
yeah, well, for sure. I mean, look at 35mm.
I know. And it's so... I mean, like, you just have to look at this roster. So, you know, you've got Betsy Wolfe, who is kind of... She's starting to really pick up speed... you know, she was in Falsettos.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to be in Carousel. She's going to be great. Alex Brightman, School of Rock. Mm-hmm.
School of Rock.
G. Armstrong Johnson, again, is picking up speed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's in On the Town, Hands on a Hard Body.
And Jimmy's Dreams. And then Lindsay Mendez.
But yeah, there you go with Lindsay Mendez. Yeah. It's like, why is she still not had a leading role?
Yeah.
Like, it's really frustrating. Well, like, obviously, Dogfight,
We were talking about this when we were prepping for this podcast. Like, I've had requests forever about 35mm for, like, Show of the Week and for the podcast. Like, they come in all the time. But for how popular this musical seems in our world, it does not have a fan following that some of the other cult favorites do.
Mm.
There's not a lot of, you know... 35mm tumblers out there in the same way as there are Heather's tumblers out there.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, Be More Chill was out for like a year and a half before it caught the wave.
That's true.
So, you know, maybe, I guess 5 years is quite a long time, but maybe it's just needs, you know, one person, Ben Platt needs to be like, this is cool. And then suddenly the world will explode over 35mm. Do you know
Don't
I mean?
Sell yourself short. Maybe a mildly popular musical theater podcast needs to talk about 35mm.
I think we do have the same weight as Ben Platt.
Yeah. I mean, if he stood on one side of a scale and we stood on the other side of a scale. No, that's not true at all.
No. but yeah, so if you're in London, go and see the production that's on. It's on at the Other Palace.
Yeah. And tell us all about it.
Yeah, please do, because I'm not going to make it down in time.
And I'm certainly not going to make it down in time.
You certainly are not. yeah, it's, I don't know. He's an exciting man, is Ryan Scott Oliver. He excites me. And he always wears a baseball cap, and I really appreciate that.
I hope your future husband is taking notes out there. So you have quite the interesting laundry list.
This isn't the podcast. There's been too many home truths. I'll punch you in the face when I wake up. You should wear it,
yeah. You know. Only listens to songs about vampires on the train.
Absolutely,
it was a catch,
but you know, I am.
That was 35mm, a musical exhibition.
I am so drunk on free sparkling wine.
And I'm just dead because I've been drinking development fluid this whole night.
Yeah, exactly. That was so silly. They weren't even offering that. You just brought that yourself.
Well, yeah. I thought it said BYODF on the invitation. Bring your
Once
own
again, development you read a B is a DF. Classic Tommy. Classic Tommy. Hey, what are we doing next week?
I got the quiz question. You ready?
Yeah.
Some people argue that this next musical features the music of Felix Mendelssohn and his violin concerto in E minor. Mendelssohn remains uncredited in this musical to this day. What show, Jimmy?
I feel like you might be one of those people, Tommy. Don't argue that.
I'm always one of those people. When yes. in doubt, I'm one of those people.
You are. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can. Come over and find me on Twitter at AsInHendrix and YouTube at the same handle.
And I'm Musical Mash on Twitter and Musical Theater Mash on YouTube. Or you can check out our show Twitter, Jim and Tomic, or the website, jimandtomic.com.
Which has a link to our fabulous Reddit discussion. We'll be chatting up a storm. I feel like there'll be lots of chat this time because there's lots of things to talk about.
Yeah, we talked about lots of things, that's for sure.
We absolutely did. That's what happens when you go to an art gallery, you know?
You talk about all things.
Yeah, exactly. And get drunk on free wine. Sparkling wine, sorry. And hey, we shall see you next
week.
Correct.
Sandwiches. Did I do that right?
You did. Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.